If you'd like to get involved with Shoreditch Radio, or if you run any local projects or events, please contact us at info@shoreditchradio.co.uk.
Esky boy, Dano, out to all my people.
Hello, we're Beanbot.
Hi, this is Dean from Lois and the Love.
This is Roman from Breton.
I am Adam Partick.
I'm Orlando from the Maccabees.
I am Colin Peters.
I'm Lewis from Chapel Club.
Hi, this is Guy from Cedar Winter.
Hello, this is Carl Barat.
Hey, this is Rita Ora, and you're listening to Shoreditch Radio. Yes!
Hello and welcome to the first Theatre Full Stop podcast with your host, Lucy Basaba. This is your chance to catch up on the latest theatre news and interviews. Tonight's special guests are writer and performer Francesca Metpam and actress Charlotte Hunt, who will be presenting Francesca's trilogy of monologues. Stay tuned for my interview with Francesca. First, looking at the latest theatre news, it's Love Theatre Day on November the 16th, and this is a chance for cast members, onstage and offstage creatives and theatre lovers to take to social media and celebrate all things theatre. Founded by digital and social innovator Mar Dixon, this movement has helped to connect millions of theatre lovers in a time where the arts is facing a major backlash, both in education and in the lack of funding that is available. To get involved, simply go onto Twitter on the 16th with hashtag Love Theatre and share your theatre pics, videos, stories and so on. The Evening Standard Awards took place at the Old Vic on Sunday, hosted by Rob Brydon. This year marks 62 years of celebrating excellence in theatre. There were 13 categories in total, with winners including Billie Piper for Best Actress, Glenn Close for Best Musical Performance, Kenneth Branagh walks away with the Lebedev Award and his season of plays, and Charlene James took home the Most Promising Playwright Award for Cutting It. A huge congratulations to all nominees and winners. Tallawah Theatre Company celebrate 30 years this year. Formed in 1986 in response to the lack of creative roles within the industry for black actors, the company have performed over 40 productions in their three decades, celebrating the works of Nobel Prize winning Wole Soyinka, Mallory Blackman OBE, Alfred Fagan Award winner Teresa Ikoko, and many more. The company have also nurtured established actors and performers, including Sharon D. Clarke, Michaela Cole, and Don Warrington, so wishing them a very happy birthday. Voting is now open for the Stage Awards, launched in 2011. These awards look to acknowledge theatres and organisations who have really performed above and beyond in their category. Categories include Best School, Best Regional Theatre, Best London Theatre and Unsung Hero. Voting is currently open to the public, with a shortlist being decided on the 22nd of December. To find out more, visit www.thestage.co.uk. Somerset House have launched Somerset Studios, offering the chance for artists in a range of disciplines to rehearse in their experimental workspaces. They'll be accepting applications from up to 25 artists, with the idea of offering potential commissioning and performance opportunities on their curated programmes. For more info, visit www.somersethouse.org.uk. And lastly, Theatre Full Stop have launched the Pub Theatre Festival, offering the opportunity for current students, graduates and emerging performers to showcase their works to a paying audience. We are working in collaboration with the Etcetera Theatre and Lion and Unicorn Theatre to bring this initiative to life, and have enjoyed a range of responses and look forward to receiving future applications. To find out more, visit www.theatrefullstop.com and type in Pub Theatre Festival. This week's top theatre picks are: number one, London Stories, made by migrants at the Battersea Arts Centre. London's history is built on migration, and this festival wants to celebrate this fact. After the success of London Stories in 2013, this event looks to place the stories of real people in the capital at the fore. Number two, Peter Pan at the National Theatre. J.M. Barrie's classic is reimagined for our day and age as Sally Cookson promises magic, music, mischief and make-believe. A production with the Bristol Old Vic, this production is set to be a Christmas event not to miss. Number three, From Page to Stage, Tristan Bates Theatre will showcase snippets of two up-and-coming shows and two mini-musicals. The shows are 21 Chump Street, written by Tony, Pulitzer Prize and Grammy Award-winning writer Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton fame, Heart of Winter by Tim Connor and Leah Buddle, The Toy Boy Diaries by Simon Warne, Wendy Salisbury, and Pollyanna by Steve Gallagher and Linda Barnett. Number 4, Berry Child. At the Trafalgar Studios, the Pulitzer Prize winning play written by Sam Shepherd makes its UK debut. Set in 1979 in a time of recession and political unrest, this topical dark family drama will leave you riveted. And number 5, La Soirée at Christmas at Leicester Square returns for the Christmas season. The hit show combines circus, cabaret and burlesque, creating a unique event of entertainment and not to be missed. Okay, and welcoming Francesca Metpam to the studios today to answer some questions. 3 of her monologues will be performed after this interview, so please stay tuned. Hi, Francesca.
Hello.
Your latest piece, Besides the Sea, was performed at the Hens and Chickens Theatre last night. How did the show go?
It went really well, thank you. Yeah, I was so pleased. Yeah,
lovely.
I was so proud of the director, Michelle Payne, and the cast, John Dayton and Leanne Pettit. They were incredible. They worked so well together as well.
Lovely.
That they just really gelled and they really caught the essence of the piece.
Yeah.
Which I think is, just so important.
Yeah.
They really understood, you know, the text. They just brought it to life.
Yeah.
Literally, when I was watching the kind of rehearsal in the afternoon, kind of, I suppose, like the dress rehearsal in a way, I literally got goosebumps. It was beautiful.
Lovely.
Yeah, literally just got chills. It was dark, it was cold, but it was beautiful.
Lovely. And that must be amazing to see as a writer as well, you know, to have written that piece of theatre and then to have somebody direct that vision of yours.
Yeah. Michelle is fantastic. She really focuses on the small details of a piece.
Lovely.
You know, she really understands the human mind, mm-hmm. and she brings out, the best in the actors. So it was lovely to work with her, you know, for the first time on Besides the Sea.
Lovely. And what's the response been to the show?
It's been, fantastic. Actually, one gentleman who came to see it actually said it was a frank and disturbing, you know, look at kind of, the superficial nature of, you know, of humanity, really.
Right.
Especially in the character of James, who is the abuser in the relationship.
Right.
He's the abusive partner. You know, what I found really interesting, actually, to the response actually from the audience was the fact that sometimes they were laughing at him because it was a blurred line there.
Right.
They didn't know, do I laugh at some of what he's saying? Is it supposed to be funny? Because you don't know how to respond to this man.
Right.
Because it's so, like, jaw-dropping, some of what he was saying to Natalie. It was, it was a really interesting response, actually, from the audience and from reviewers.
Yeah.
And, really, really... I was really happy with that.
The piece you've just said focuses on a mentally abusive relationship. Mm. What inspired you to write a piece on this topic?
I think what I wanted it to be very multi-layered, really, because it's about a couple, a young couple, which sometimes you don't get the focus on. It's sometimes can be more middle-aged or a couple that have been in a relationship for a very long time.
Right.
Whereas this couple, you know, they've been together for a few years, you know, from university, they're in, you know, the mid maybe to late 20s, and you don't always get that, you know, a young couple who, just this kind of young couple who are going through, you know, with Natalie, she's been diagnosed with cancer as well, which makes it very different,
right.
You know, but it's not the main focus. Main focus is this mentally abusive relationship, but it's almost like it's an inconvenience to James. It's kind of thrown into the mix.
Right.
Which I kind of, I wanted. I wanted something that hadn't been done before. And it's set on a beach as well, called Besides the Sea, you know. So it's got all these, you know, they live by a beach. She's moved down to be with him, down by the coast. She's left her family, her friends. She's isolated. Mm-hmm. And then a beach can almost be like that. It's this very kind of cold area. You can be on a beach, just the two of you.
Right.
And, that's all it is, just a long coastline of nothing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the relationship was. It was empty.
Yeah.
It was cold. He's cold. Yeah. He's abusive.
Yeah.
He's nasty.
Yeah.
But again, some of what he was saying was almost like people didn't know how to respond to it. Do I, you know, is he trying to be funny?
Right.
What I wanted was, well, that he was actually maybe, at the start, that's what she saw in him, that he had this humour, but it's become very cold and very cutting. But yeah, it's very, I wanted it to be very multifaceted.
Right.
So hopefully that comes across in the piece.
You've had a busy year, as another piece of yours, Reception, was performed at the Clapham Fringe. How was the audience reaction to the show?
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah, I was so proud. I was just so pleased with the director and the cast. They were amazing. Like, I've been so fortunate to have had Adam Morley direct it since last December, you know, nearly a year, you know, from the beginning. And he's an incredible director. His vision is just, yeah, unparalleled. What he's kind of done with the, you know, the extended version of Reception is just amazing. You know, there's one scene where, you know, he's turned into like an aerobics dance class, which is just so inspired.
Right.
You know, I won't give away too much, you know, in case, you know, you always want to come and sit, but yeah, incredible. And the cast are amazing. You know, we have Charlotte Hunt, we have Glyn Mantho as well, who's been in Reception from the beginning, Rachel Hilton. Yeah, it's been wonderful because we've actually, you know, had, you know, two new cast members,
right?
And the dynamic is amazing. Yeah. I say the dream team, you know, the four of them work fantastically.
Lovely.
Yeah, I'm really, yeah, I was really chuffed. And the audience, you know, they loved it. They got the, you know, the jokes, you know, the kind of the wit, the dry humour, as well as the out and out, you know, silliness of it, which is what I really wanted, you know, to be a real kind of a mixture of the silliness and the, you know, the wit. And that's what I really loved about having Charlotte on board. You know, she's got this really kind of dry humour that I actually love. And mixed with Glyn as well, they just work, they bounce off each other, which is great. And Rachel as well, her kind of accents and her, you know, she's got a great kind of physical presence as well, you know, and the three of them, brilliant.
Lovely.
Fantastic, yeah, amazing.
What inspired you to write the piece?
Well, I used to work, well, for 3.5 years, I worked as kind of a temp receptionist at the NHS, and then I used to kind of go back on and off. And I just had this idea of, you know, if I was working there and I had an ex working there with me, how would that work?
Yeah.
You know, with all these kind of visitors coming in and, you know, everyday kind of mundane things. But, you know, sometimes you do get the odd kind of, odd visitor who kind of knocks you off balance a bit, you know, and to have your ex next to you as well. So you're kind of bickering and then you have someone coming in. And what I liked, what I really loved actually about Charlotte and Glyn is actually the way they just kind of, you know, just carry on the, you know, the banter and, you know, almost, yeah, just to kind of ignore the guests, you know, not the guests, the visitors coming in. It was brilliant. I loved it. You know, they weren't really the main focus. It was their relationship. But then you have the comic, you know, interjection from Rachel as, you know, the visitors. I really liked that.
We've worked together previously, as another monologue of yours from your play Should was recorded for the website. What's prevalent in your writing is the effect of heartbreak on your characters. Why focus on this certain topic?
It's really strange because I never kind of sat down and thought, oh, okay, I write a lot that's about it, you know, about heartbreak. But I always think if heartbreak, it can either make you or break you.
Right.
I think it's got so much scope for kind of comedy or for drama. And relationships happen every day all around us. We have them, you know, we break up from someone, we get together with someone, we fall in love. And, yeah, there's just so much there, really. I think even you might do something or you might say something, you don't realise it's because of a relationship or because you're feeling something that's been caused by, you know, meeting that person or breaking up from that person. There's just so much, I think, scope in there for theatre in relationship. But most of kind of theatre that we see is about relationships,
right?
Even though, yeah, we might say, "Oh, yeah, we're a feminist. We don't want to be about men or about women or whatever." You know, yeah, a lot of what we, what we do is about someone or a memory of someone.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
And lastly, what advice would you give to aspiring writers?
Wow, I think what I do is I always try and have a phone or a laptop or my tablet near me, even if it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. Charlotte's performing today, Should, it's very much like, I wrote that 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to have something nearby. And, yeah, it was just, it just came to me in the middle of the night. And I was like, okay, I need to write something. Write something. And, yeah, I think you've always got to just be prepared to kind of have a, you know, something nearby that you can write about, write on. And, yeah, just always put down your feelings and what you're feeling right in the moment, definitely.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Francesca. On each podcast, each week, I'll be showcasing a new piece of writing. Luckily, this week, Francesca has 3 pieces of writing she'd like showcased. They'll be showcased by Charlotte Hunt. We will start off with a monologue from the play Should.
I knew I'd lost. The game was over. The pictures were clear. They were shouting at me. They are married, you loser. Get over it. But I can't. As much as I try, all I see are those pictures and that dress and the hair. And it was all for him. It was always for him. He looks happy, I suppose, just not the way you're meant to. Well, the way we were meant to when we got married. He joked about us having a wedding in Vegas. Maybe he didn't think I was worth the big, white wedding. But when you are in love, I mean, you would marry that person in the bottom of a dustbin. You couldn't care less. I never realised that until I'd lost him. Well, not fully, anyway. I mean, if I was given a time machine, I would change it. I would go back and I would make him want me with every bit of fight I have. Because I'm selfish. And I want someone who literally couldn't wait to meet somebody else. Like his dream woman. She adores him, but so did I. They did all of the things we should have done. And I'm reminded of that every single time I go on Facebook. It is a sickening reminder of what I lost and what I should have. And as hard as I try, I seem to find myself imagining what life would be like if we were together right now. Just like really mundane, boring things like food shopping in Tesco's or cleaning our teeth together. It would be something special because he would be there. Like the Midas touch, I guess. But it's more than that. It's his touch. He really is the most unique man I've ever met, and that's the problem. There is just no one like him. He makes me smile and cry at the same time. I felt so lucky when I met him to have him in my life, and the pathetic thing is I still do. And even sadder still is the fact that I don't have him in my life anymore, and I probably never will again. I've just got memories. I know I'm still young and I feel like I could have another 60 years of this regret, and it just aches so much. And I mean, what the hell do I do? It looks like I just live every day the same until one day it stops hurting like this, or live every day until I stop living another life in my head that I should be bloody smug about right now.
Lovely. Okay, next monologue will be from Francesca's piece, Jade Jacket and Trousers.
It was gone. Everything had just, well, gone. People say, oh, I had an awful year in 2008. Well, I did. And I tell you, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm going to be honest. The business, what my grandparents risked everything to build, just went down the plug hole like strands of molten hair. Until then, I thought that's what my future would be. With my grandparents' business altering clothes. I guess you could call it tailoring if you want to be really posh. But I'd always been around clothes, which is not the best thing when you're 15 and 15 stone. And no, this isn't about my weight loss journey and that I'm making a fitness DVD before you start rolling your eyes and wanting me to just shut the hell up. It's... My name's Jade, by the way. So I was known as Jade Jacket and Trousers at school. If you needed something altered, you'd just pop in, see my grandparents at the shop. Well, that translates as, Jade will get us a good discount on that dress I want shortened, so it's more like a T-shirt. And, well, that's how it was. Even when I left school and worked full-time in the shop, but I didn't see it like that back then, like I do now. People who I'd been friends with from school cast me aside like I was nothing. Not even just Jade Jacket and Trousers anymore, I was just Jade Nothing. The calls stopped. The texts. Well, what a surprise. No one wants to know the self-made when you aren't making money anymore. That's how it felt. I was pretty useless and empty. I was, 20 years old and felt like a scared, lost 5-year-old. My mum told me to get a job like everyone else who hadn't bothered to go to university, like me. I had no real friends left to turn to, so I had one person, and that was me. I literally had two choices to make, and I had to make them bloody quick. What did I do with my life, and how was I going to shut that voice away in my head that told me whatever I was going to do, it was just going to fail, then fail, and probably fail again? What did I really want to do, not just as a career, but like my grandparents, it had to be their whole life. So imagine the scene where I'm sitting on the sofa one day watching Neighbours, the afternoon one, obviously, not the evening one, because I had no job. And I do mean the TV show, as times hadn't got that bad that I was watching my mostly elderly neighbours for entertainment. So I was sitting on the sofa watching Neighbours, and then it came to me. I like bags. I love bags. I always have, and I always will. It's as simple as that. The sewing skills come in handy, as I knew I could embellish. I could personalise, and in fact, I could do just about anything to them. And I felt this sense of power all of a sudden over my life that I'd never had before. And I guess you could call it fate. But my grandparents, their surname is Bagdatis, well, and mine. And I know, but why had I not thought of this before? So the company was born 7 years ago. And it made me realise that I was more than that discount girl at school with superficial bitches as so-called friends. I wasn't just a trend. I am a one-off classic. I am Jade Bagdatis, proud owner and founder of Bagdatis Bags.
And lastly, Charlotte will be presenting a monologue from the play Side Bitch.
Oh, I may look like a lady, but I am every male's fantasy. I don't call or text or invade their space. I just appear like a genie out of a lamp when they see my pretty little face. Gentlemen, I hope I'm not making you all uncomfortable in your seat right now, especially when your girlfriend is sitting next to you. Is she as pretty as me? No, of course she's not. So why are you with her? Let me guess. She's loyal, kind and funny. Oh, and her dad is fucking minted. And maybe that's what I need. An oil. You've heard of an oil, right? Old, ill and loaded. I guess you could say I'm the looks men crave in their partner. That mysterious Eastern European vibe. No idea where I get it from. No one in my family is rocking the look. Just me. Maybe I'm adopted, and that's why I have a compulsion to want to be someone's bit on the side. Because a part of me is missing, and this will fill the void. Oh, behave, I'm middle class. I prefer the term side bitch, because it's exciting, it's raw, and it makes me sound a threat. Any moment I could tell that loyal girlfriend of yours just what you are.
Thank you very much. I just want to say a big thank you to Francesca and for Charlotte for joining me in the studio today. A big thank you to all of you who are listening. Thank you to Shoreditch Radio. And please make sure to tune in next week. For your latest theatre news, interviews, reviews, visit www.theatrefullstop.com.
Listening to Shoreditch Radio, shoreditchradio.co.uk.